financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
It's that nobody's telling you because nobody cares enough to actually give you the truth. You're missing the moment. Or every time somebody walks into the open house, your voice goes up an octave. Or when you're talking to them, you're rocking back and forth and you don't realize it. There are all these physical cues that people are just not getting. So it's a tough love workshop.
You're swiveling back and forth.
Yes. It's hard for people to plant themselves in their power.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm doing good. And we have a guest today.
We do. If you want to take control of your financial future and find out why real estate might be just one of those most powerful, underutilized tools to do it, you want to stay with us. Joining me today is someone who lives and breathes that mission, Courtney Polis. She's the broker, CEO of Acme Real Estate, founder of Real Estate AI Coach. Listen up, folks. It may not be quite what you think. And author of Break Up With Your Rental, a title I love. Welcome to the show, Courtney.
Thank you so much. Honored to be here.
Well, it's
are you a
pleasure.
Fan of Wile E. Coyote is what I want to know.
You know what? People ask me that all the time, but no, that's not where the name comes from. And it's okay. Not an acronym.
Where does the name come from?
We're an anti-brand. I was getting really frustrated. You know, our industry has been primarily male dominated and primarily corporate owned. And real estate is one of those, still to this day, it is one of those big kind of industries that has a lot of private equity, a lot of Vanguard. And, you know, even though it seems like you're choosing from a bunch of different options, you're really not choosing. They're all owned by the same entities. So Acme is an anti-brand. It's a generic brand name so that we could put our clients first and really create a custom branded approach for each client as opposed to marketing just some corporate brand. It's a rebel brand. I'm a bit of a rebel.
It's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
So you've had, what, 2 decades in the industry of helping people? Especially women. And there's 3 of us on screen today. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I would say step into financial independence through property ownership, right? And you deal with mindset and education as well, right? So talk to us a little bit about that. What's your thinking behind buying real estate if you're a woman?
Well, there are 2 pieces to it. And I will say we are seeing leaps and bounds of female home ownership. So that's amazing. What the book goes into is really the idea that somebody's going to save us, right? Like we're taught as children that we wait, you know, we have to be superwomen. We go to college and then we get out and then we find Mr. Right. And then we buy the house. Then when we find Mr. Right and start making babies, and that's what home ownership is. That's grandma's version of home ownership. And then you never sell. But the modern woman usually is getting married a little bit later, having babies a little bit later, having a career. And yet this piece has fallen out. Like we come out of college strapped with debt, not thinking, hey, maybe I could pay the same amount buying a condo as opposed to paying rent. And then at least I have an appreciating asset that when in 3 years I go to refinance or sell, gives me a chunk of money that I can pay off my student loan debt. For example, that's just one example. And I know there's good debt and bad debt and it's weighed differently and all of that kind of thing. But a lot of people make choices based on their debt load, choices in life, choices about their partners, choices about what jobs they want to work. And they live in misery until they break free from it. I'm trying to shorten that misery period with the book by just saying there's many ways to get in here. And I don't know about you, but I was never raised in a home that we owned. You know, I didn't learn about it until I was in my 20s. And I was kind of late in my 20s. I'm like, dang, nobody told me about this. When I got into real estate, I had a 500 credit score. I was loaded with student debt. I thought I was never going to get out of it. And real estate really created a path to financial stability that I couldn't even have imagined. And that's the thing. It's one of those few pathways to legacy wealth in America that's left. And it's always under attack, I should say. So you kind of have to get in when you can, where you can, which is one of the best pieces of advice I ever received.
I have to agree with you. I did grow up in a house that my parents owned, but they struggled to do it. And I bought my first house when I was 21. I had a good credit score, but, single buying my first house, it was not a piece of cake to do. And that is where it started. I was able to turn it over in a year's time. So a lot of that is common between us. We should say, are you in Los Angeles today or Florida? Where are you?
Yeah, well, I go back and forth between Los Angeles and Florida. I have a brokerage in Los Angeles and a brokerage in Florida. Right now, I'm in Orlando, Florida. We're just launching the new Acme headquarters in Orlando, which is really cool. It has a big social media studio, and we're about to expand our team there. So I'm here providing support to our broker on the ground in Florida, and I head back to LA next week.
Great. And you have how many agents do you have now?
We have 35 in LA and we have 10 in Florida. That team is ex about to expand, but a lot of that is really conscious. With real estate brokerage ownership, it's not the same as corporate brokerage ownership. Corporate brokerage ownership is about numbers, algorithms. You want a big number of low to medium producers because you can take more profit off of those. The high producing agents really costs the company money, but it's good advertising, right? So your splits are different. They don't make the company a lot of money. It's the mid-level producers that make brokerages money. With real estate being always changing, but in this moment of consolidation, in order to keep a boutique brokerage afloat, you have to have a slightly different algorithm. So we are really making sure that our team is not rookies. A lot of people get into this business and think they want to do it. And once they realize, oh, it's not as easy as it looks on TV, they don't really want to work. And let's face it, it's not for everybody. And it is something that needs deductive reasoning skills, contract skills. You need administrative and emotional intelligence, and that's just not everybody's forte. Some people really need to be hand-fed, like this is what you need to do. Every day looks the same, and real estate is not that. So it's not for everyone, and we just, we've kind of pared down our team in order to just keep the people who are really committed to growth.
Really quickly, speaking of the TV shows, have you seen an uptick since all those selling shows have come out, Owning Manhattan and Selling Sunset and all that? Have people wanted to apply thinking it was just that?
100%. Now remember, in Los Angeles, there's always this feeling like something big could be around the corner, like a TV show could just be waiting for you. And if you're like an actor who's out of work, you get your real estate license, or maybe, I had a TV show on FYI Network too. Like sometimes you just kind of get handed shows. Anything can happen, but those shows are such bull. I can't, sorry, I hope I can say that. Am I allowed? It's so bad. I was on Million Dollar Listing and it was a real transaction. I have to say, James Harris and his team, they're like, class acts, like 100%. It was a real transaction. It was filmed after the transaction, so it wasn't real time. And my client didn't actually want to be on camera, so her sister pretended to be my client on the show. It's fake, but the reality is we don't negotiate that way. We can't just say the things that they say on TV. There's a liability. It's a litigious industry. And when the market is tight and people are feeling this anxiety in the housing market, those lawsuits, it's just dangerous for a rookie to get in. So, yes, there's an uptick in interest. I get probably 2 to 3 emails a day from new agents who are like, I heard about you guys and you have an incredible training program and I'd love to get in. I'm like, I'm sorry. We're just not accepting people who are five deals or less. And then even when we do interview people, we make them do a deductive reasoning exercise and we actually see what their contract skills are. So we have them write a contract in our office to make sure that they're aligned. We ask them questions about situational awareness, what would they do in this thing or that thing, ethical understandings of the code of ethics, for example, ethical understanding. We try to really get to it in the interview process. So We're just not one of those brokerages that takes anybody who applies. And that's kind of the big box model, a little different than a boutique. We have to be careful.
You know, we will certainly talk about your coaching that's coming up and things like that. You have a couple of interesting and new programs coming out, but they're based on the fact that, you know, anybody can take their real estate exam, but almost none of that is really about the kind of training that we want these people to have, because a lot of brokers will hire anybody with a new license because they're making money on them. So I really admire that you're critiquing people and you're setting the bar higher for brokers, because it's one of the largest expenses, the biggest purchases you will ever make in your life. You are, when we talk about financial wellness, you make a comment about understanding your money and how it moves and not giving away your money power. Can you share with us what that might look like for someone who's just starting out?
Well, just starting out means a lot of different things, but the number one most important thing is that people who are wealthy do not run away from financial understanding. So this idea that you want to pay a financial advisor to manage your money for you, or that you're just paying the cheapest accountant to do your taxes for you, expecting that there's going to be some investment by them in your structure, is the part that we're sold or that we lazily like accept. That it didn't, it took me a long time to realize was part of the problem. I was so afraid of understanding money and how it worked that I probably, looking back, would have made a lot of different choices. So understanding the way money works is paramount to making smart choices. And you do need diversity in your portfolio, but what does that mean? Like, I love real estate. I used to hate 401ks. I'm like, I'm just not a stock market gal. Like, I know with real estate, it always goes up. 80 of the last 85 years, we've seen values go up, and we know which years we didn't, right? Like, they were really circumstances that will not be reproduced. So, and the people that gave up in during those early, during 2008 in LA anyway, came to regret it. There was a lot of media hype around that. It's a long-term play. It's not a short-term play. It's not like, oh, I can just buy and sell in any market. So as long as you have some short-term and some long-term plays in your portfolio, you can make smarter choices. Now, what I recently learned is about how the truly wealthy use IRAs and real estate together. So there's so much always to learn about the structure in America, but my number one piece of advice for people just starting their financial careers, like maybe just out of college, is to lean fully into financial education. Learn definitions, learn about the different types of accounts that there are. Find out about different types of loan programs, first-time homebuyer programs, down payment programs. Talk to somebody like me, but buy something where your rent is offset. If you're just a single person, there is no reason why you need a single family house. Get a duplex, get a two on a lot, get a four unit with an FHA 3.5% down loan. Go in with your friends. Like, there's so many options. No excuses. Learn money and how to make it work for you at any price point.
All right, this seems like a great time to take a quick break, but first I want to get your number, Francis.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
All right, such a great conversation. You can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. We're back with Courtney Polis, and we're talking about real estate, how to get into it, how it can be your money power. Courtney is famous for helping women, especially. And where we left off was talking about, you know, get in at any, not at any cost, but get in when you can. No excuses. Do a creative deal. Jess and I have talked about this many times on the air, about maybe starting with a plan A, plan B, start with a duplex and then move on to your dream home or whatever. Don't overbuy and get your mortgage and your other debts into our system so that you don't pay for the mortgage for 30 years, right? On the same money. So that's why I said we have to talk off camera a little bit because there's a lot of overlap here. But to that point, you have two new programs coming up. I don't want to, I want to make sure we leave time for AI because that's a hot topic, but will you
Sure.
tell us about your coaching programs?
Yeah, absolutely. So this year I'm launching Agent Beast Mode, which is a 5-day intensive, like 9 to 5, fully immersive, small class training program in certain major cities. It's going to be application only for agents who have done 5 or more deals and are feeling a little bit stuck, feeling like they're not getting what it is they need from their broker. They need a boost. You know, this is the training for them. Here's the thing. I come from an acting background. I don't know if you know that. One of the most powerful moments in my life was when I moved to Los Angeles, thinking that I was very talented and unique, like everyone. And I sat down in a acting class with a crazy man as an acting teacher. Okay. And he assigned me a monologue and I picked a monologue out of a monologue book, not knowing that that's a no-no. I didn't know that. It's like the stage elite. Like you only can do like stage plays, not monologue books, but whatever. I go onto the stage. I do my monologue. I think I did okay. I sit down in the chair and he got this close from my face and he said, "If you don't have something to say," and I'll spare you the F word, but he said, "get thee off the stage." And it hit me. It was so important. What he was saying to me is, "I'm untrained. I don't belong here yet." And I immediately went and got trained at a Meisner school for 2 years. Okay. Here's how it applies to real estate. We are a people business. We have listening, we have responsiveness, there's emotional intelligence involved in it, but there's also reactivity. You have to engage with the other person, you know, in an open house, in a Zoom meeting. You have to analyze what their fears are and address their concerns. There's an intelligence to sales that people who get in this industry never get critiqued on. So they're out there hosting open houses going, "Why is nobody choosing to respond to my email? How come nobody wants to be my client out of this? Why am I not getting leads from the neighbors to sell their house? I just met that lady yesterday and now the house next door is going up. Why didn't they call me?" And it's not actually a mystery. It's that nobody's telling you because nobody cares enough to actually give you the truth. You're missing the moment. Or every time somebody walks into the open house, your voice goes up an octave. Or when you're talking to them, you're rocking back and forth and you don't realize it. There are all these physical cues that people are just not getting. So it's a tough love workshop. You're
swiveling back and forth.
Yes. It's hard for people to plant themselves in their power. This is what I've learned.
Yep.
Having trained agents now for 11 years, I've like boiled it down to the core basics: contract competency, open house effectiveness. But really, it really all is about emotional intelligence and learning how you appear for other people and figuring out how to pull different cards out of your deck in the different important moments in sales. And it's just a boost that I haven't seen any other training program like it. And, you know, it really works. It really works. So that's Agent Beast Mode. And then we also have Broker Beast Mode, which is essentially a facelift for broker owners who do not want to affiliate. So we were talking earlier about how the market is consolidating right now. You're seeing Element might be up for sale and big brokerages are just kind of like clicking together. And that's what happens when the market's down. You'll see a lot of, you know, mergers and acquisitions, and not every broker wants to do that, but they're like, "Where's my competitive edge? Where can I be competitive?" And so there's a deep dive into the market of each broker for Broker Beast Mode. And then we do an analysis of logo, branding, training, structures, systems. How can we be more efficient and effective and competitive in attracting and recruiting great talent that stays with you, but also grows with you? And that's a big challenge in real estate. So these are my two new programs. I'm very excited about it. They're going to be, again, like kind of one-on-one to start with the Broker Beast Mode and then Agent Beast Mode, small group classes. So like no more than 10 agents in one class in major American cities. So we're building our list of students right now.
Yeah. I love that this is based on knowledge, right? You cannot have people who don't know what they're doing facilitating the sale of your largest purchase in life. Speaking of which, you are the author of Breakup with Your Rental. I love the title. Can you explain a little bit about the book?
Sure, absolutely. So break up with your rental. The subhead is a Professional Woman's Guide to Building Wealth Through Real Estate, but it really applies to men and women. But a lot of us aren't trained on money when we're young. You know, I wish that was part of our high school education. We
A lot.
should know this. Come on. Yeah, a lot, like the
Like
majority,
most.
like
Yeah.
most.
Right.
And we rent and we're just paying somebody else's mortgage. But usually it's because we don't have family money. We're working paycheck to paycheck. We come out of college loaded with debt for a lot of people, or you don't even go to college and you're just working. Break up with your rental, or it goes through all these hurdles in real estate. You know, when you see other people doing it and you go, but I'm never going to be able to do that, or I'm waiting for this moment to kind of gives it gives readers many different pathways in. So we do discuss multifamily investing. Here's another one. You know, my company, Acme Real Estate, it has a niche in renovation resale, which is a term I coined because flipper sounds horrible and has this negative connotation of being
Right.
cheap. But at Acme, we have in-house design. We know how to do appraisals for the most expensive house on the block. We have 2 decades of experience selling houses that have been flipped. And so we really improve the value. But you know what is always needed? Design help. A lot of flippers need design help and they can't afford a professional designer. They don't want to pay for that. So if you're somebody who wants to project manage and get and do some design help for a flipper for free up front, but then you get paid a portion of the sale at close, for example, there's a way to make a chunk of money that you can use then as a down payment. Or really being creative with the first-time home buyer programs or down payment programs. And if you can't buy where you live, buy where you can. The
That's
East Coast
right.
cash flows, the West Coast appreciates. We all know this. So you can absolutely buy a single-family house in Akron, Ohio for less than $100,000. Buy it, rent it out to some college students or whatever, and make $500 of profit on that house. Every month that can contribute toward your rent. You're already starting. And then once you get yourself a little bit more acclimated, you refinance, you take some cash out, you buy another one. You know, you got to start somewhere. But
Yeah.
break up with your rental is meant to help people jump whatever objections they have created in their mind that aren't real. And all the while the objections are happening, the market's appreciating. So if you
Yeah.
think it's touch now, out of reach, then it's going to be way more out of reach in 10 years when you think you're finally ready. It's like having a baby. You're never really ready. You just got to do it.
Yeah, I have to jump in, of course, just to caution people that I'm a big fan of real estate, right? That's how I started. That's how a lot of my people start. I do have a client who bought a house in Ohio for about $48,000, and is fixing it up as she lives there. She moved there. She's like, I can't afford to live in New England. I'm moving to Ohio. So it's possible. But I do want to say, it can be very appealing to have somebody just say, just go buy something and get rent. It has its challenges. You want somebody professional behind you doing this, somebody with knowledge who can say, yeah, there's a rental out here. Here's a company that might help to manage it because you're going to be 800 miles away. Or, here's what to watch out for. Don't forget about your taxes and insurance. One of the things I love, I won't go on about it, but I've been pre-approved for this amount of money. Yeah, pre-approved is not approved. And they may not care about your taxes and insurance. They're looking at what your mortgage payment is going to be. And so there are a lot of things you really have to be careful of with that. But that being said, I love that you're empowering people to start doing something about this. And speaking of that kind of service, I have to segue into AI because you are working as an AI coach, and I have a feeling what your opinion is going to be similar to mine at the moment. But we have 2 minutes left. Can you tell
Okay,
us a
2
little bit
minutes. All
about
right.
AI?
So
Yeah.
I just recently started a channel. It's on YouTube. It's called Real Estate AI Coach. We are growing, but basically on Real Estate AI Coach, I am reviewing all of the apps that real estate agents are being sold as AI solutions.
I've got a list of about a billion different things to join on your behalf. I'm joining them. Yes, I'm using my credit card to join them and then crying at night when I realize that I forgot to turn the subscription off.
And you know what I'm learning?
I still think it has work to do. Nothing's perfect yet, which is why I'm even doing this channel.
They are not ready for prime time, okay? The CMA that they have, like a lot of apps are like, we'll help you price the house. It's based on data that's bad
Right.
because it can't read the images. It can't compare apples to apples. It doesn't understand tax record versus marketing square footage. It doesn't know which renovations are permitted, which aren't. It can't distinguish between laminate and hardwood floors. It's not there yet. AI, the main thing is that it's only as good as what goes into it. And
That's
so,
right.
And so if you're not putting good data in, you can't get good results out. AI is not going to replace real estate agents for the most important piece of our job. You can have it fill out a contract, perhaps, but you still got to check it. You can have it help you with marketing strategies, but just know every other agent who looks at it for marketing strategies, it's getting the same thing. And as a
That's right.
consumer, they can see when your postcard or your Instagram post has AI generated content.
Yeah,
Consumers aren't
I
fooled.
agree.
So you still need to be in control of your career, your voice. AI cannot replace us. I was thinking of calling it Courtney versus AI after I did the first like four reviews. I'm like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. But yeah, so really I'm coaching people to use AI as a tool, never to replace a skill set.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Garbage in, garbage out. I won't go on about this either, but we have had to seal it off. We are working with AI, but we've been able to build something really amazing, but we had to seal it off. It has to be built on just our data, or you're going to get wrong answers, and we can't have that. It's supposed to be meant to enhance and provide better service, not to replace us. And I know there's a lot of fear out there that it will replace humans, but I think just like when everybody said, oh, the internet is going to replace humans and, we're never going to have jobs again, we're just going to reinvent ourselves. And AI is great for some things, right? Great to help you with some tasks, but it's a starting point. Washington Post just did an article where they tested a bunch of different AI things. And what they found is Claude was good for this, ChatGPT was good for that, but none of them really had it all together yet. And in the end, you're
Exactly.
absolutely right. We absolutely have to remember we are the humans. We are the ones with the real brain who put the data out there in the first place, and we have to discern what is good, bad, or otherwise. So I thank you very much for that and for staying with us through all of those topics. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. This is a fun conversation. We could probably go on and on.
We could.
For
Courtney, can
sure.
I get some info on you, your email or phone number?
Sure. My email is Courtney at Acme, ACME, that's M as in Mary, dash RE.com. And my phone number is 323-919-0375. My website is CourtneyPolis.com. The company website is Acme-RE.com.
All right. And Francis, for you, your phone number?
Thank you. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, on WHMP.
Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by
Hug Your Money, it's where you belong. Your future's waiting steady and strong. Dignity shines in the smallest dream. Permission granted to chase your dream.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Do you find that's the case with credit? That sometimes you see people who are totally credit worthy, but their score is lousy, or the other way around, their score is great because they pay everything, but they're doing it by leveraging their credit cards?
Yeah, I think the scoring thing is very funny to me. The example I always give is like you and I might have the same exact credit score, 700, let's just say, or 720. So it's good, but it's not great.
Right.
Except couple months ago you were 650 and you're on your way up, and a couple months ago I was 820 and I'm on my way down. But a number's a number, and we both have the same credit score, and we're treated the same. And I think that's where we run into a little bit of the problem when we start to narrow things down to a single number, right?
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you this morning?
I am good, and we are joined by some guests.
We are joined by one guest anyway, Michael Tarquinio from Best Egg, a company that some of you may know as a lender and others as a financial service company, but I'll let him describe it. What we're really discussing today is, you know, if you are somebody who thought companies don't care about you, right, you're just a number. Michael and I got into a discussion about this, about the evolving relationship between companies and you. So treating the customer in a way that builds a relationship. And I just want to turn this over to Michael and say welcome. And please give us a little history about Best Egg.
So I'm Mike Tarquinio. I'm the Senior Director of Customer Experience and Insights at Best Egg. Best Egg is a financial services company. Our core focus is on loan products. And our target market is limited savings customers. And when people talk about, you know, personal loans, they have this interpretation or this idea in their head that our customers are on the poorer side of the financial spectrum and that they have bad credits. And the fact is, through our research, we know that our actual customers are across the entire spectrum. So we have customers that do sit on the lower end of a credit spectrum, but we also have customers that have 750 credit scores who are making six figures. And they leverage our products as part of their broader plan for how they manage their money. So all year long, they're doing their thing, and they may take out a personal loan to go on a vacation. And then they pay that off over the next year or two, and then take out another personal loan to do some construction on their home. So people have this misunderstanding of what a personal loan is and how they might leverage it. But we kind of sit in there to help support people who are looking for some financing for an event or an emergency.
So you see a lot of repeat borrowers. Is what you're telling me, right?
Some cases. So I break our customers into two groups. It's those who need financial assistance for an emergency. So car breaks down, there's a medical emergency, they've had a significant change in their income and need some kind of assistance. And then we have the planners who use personal loan as part of their ongoing plan to do things that they want to do.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because you led off with something that we often say too. There's a misunderstanding that the people that we deal with are, you know, bad at managing their money or have no money or in dire straits. And it just isn't true. Most of the clients that both your company and mine deal with are middle to middle upper income with a decent credit score. They're just hanging on to the edge of the cliff sometimes, right? Yeah. Best Egg has done a lot of research, it seems. Have you seen a shift in the last several months? And can you talk about that in the way that customers are engaging with your company?
Engagement is pretty steady. We see an uptick when the economy starts going through changes. Any changes, we'll start to see an uptick. So rates come down, we'll see an uptick as people look to refinance higher interest rates. If the economy is getting bad or people are losing jobs, we'll see an uptick as people take out loans to kind of rebalance where they are based on the changes that they're impacted. We do a quarterly macroeconomic tracker. So we reach out to our customers and we get sentiment, which is, again, another way to say, how do you feel about a lot of topics, specifically financially related topics? And so the last one we did was beginning of April, and it was the largest significant negative slide that we've seen over the last 3 years. So how do you feel about your finances? How do you feel about the economy? Are you stressed about being able to pay bills? Are you stressed about the cost of living? All of that has slid more negative than we've seen in doing this quarterly for the past 3 years.
Yeah. I, you know, it's funny when we do this research, we think we're going to be surprised sometimes, but more often than not, it just confirms our worst fears or whatever. So I would say, What does that really mean to somebody? That kind of a shift. What does that mean to someone who's living paycheck to paycheck?
Problem is uncertainty, right? Living paycheck to paycheck when things you feel are okay or a little bit more positive, I think it allows you to feel more comfortable in where you're at, right? So you're still living paycheck to paycheck, but there's some optimism. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. There's even some potential, idea that you're going to get there. You're going to overcome the debt. You're going to finally get where you need to be. When we see all of these changes and people start having the negative sentiment, I think that's where people are impacted the most, right? So you're living paycheck to paycheck, but now you don't know if that paycheck's going to come in the next couple of weeks. You don't know if that cost of groceries is going to go up, is rent going to go up, or the cost of my basic living essentials going to go up. So now I'm getting further and further into debt. So I think it's that shift that impacts your day-to-day when you're living paycheck to paycheck.
I know that somebody out there will laugh at me when I say this, but this is a fun conversation.
Well,
Believe it
so
or
I'm a
not.
data person, and so when you can look at data that reaffirms some of the things you think or contradicts it, it's great because you have something that you could pull up and say, oh, well, look, I have proof, I have evidence that shows this. And I think that's what makes it interesting. It's not that it's interesting that things are right now negative or appear to be negative. It's that we have the data that shows this and we know the impacts. And from an organizational perspective, it allows us to react, right? So
That's
we
right.
see this negativity, we see the sentiment starting to turn down about the economy. So what we do is we look to drive people into areas of our business that offer support and help. So we have an element of our organization called Best Egg Financial Health. It's the area where we drive people for a lot of basic tools to help support them thinking through how they will manage their money or their debt, or to think about, like, what does it look like? What is debt to income currently in my situation? How do I overcome that? So we can start to shift our messaging and put people in position to be able to learn a little bit more about, overcoming that fear they might have based on the current situation.
Yeah, it really is a pleasure to see a company, approaching this with such intentionality. And it does sound like our paths cross a lot. We should maybe chat after the show about how our paths might cross and what we can do to help people. But what I'm hearing from you in this sort of ongoing thread is that, transactional support isn't enough anymore. We're dealing with people's emotions. They want to have a relationship. We need to have a relationship with them if we're going to keep their business, right? So, if I'm right, if I'm in line with your thinking about that, what can a company like Best Egg do to ensure that that trust and relationship are front and center?
No, we're definitely aligned. What we're seeing trends over time, and in recent time, the last year, is that when sentiment starts to go down, it doesn't change their need for the money. So we still see applications going up. But what we do is look to focus on how we build a positive relationship with them outside of the transaction. So we know they need the transaction, and we've got videos and stories of people telling us how valuable we were in stepping in to help them solve a very tough problem that they were incurring. But we want to focus now on how do we build a long-standing relationship, not only from a business perspective, because at the end of the day, if we could build that relationship, it lowers our delinquency, but also we can help them along their path to feel more confident about the decisions they're making about their money. So we're on a, we have a goal for the next, I'd say, 18 months to 2 years to start looking at opportunities to develop stronger relationships with our customers. So being proactive, reaching out to them and inviting them to come back and learn about either some of our tools or reaching out to see if there's ways that we can offer help or support. We're examining ways to proactively look at potential stumbling blocks that sit in your path from a financial stability perspective related to making your payments. And like, can we be proactive and offer them payment assistance or ways to ensure that they stay positive about where we're going with the economy.
Absolutely. I wanted to go back for a minute to something that you said a couple of moments ago about people being worried that if they're living paycheck to paycheck and they don't know if their job is going to be there, that that's an extra sort of catalyst, right, or an extra load on them. Do you find that some people are wanting to borrow now, even if they don't need the money, because they're afraid they won't qualify for a loan in the not too distant future?
Great
Or
question. I don't have
do
the
they tell
details on
you?
that. Yeah, like that's a good, very good question. I don't know that we have the specific details on that. We do have opportunity for people to give us some narrative about why they're taking the loan. Nobody's been proactively like squirreling money away. I think the concern would be is that like you're gonna get interest and start making payments on something that you may not need. So I haven't seen that in the data yet, but it doesn't mean it's not there. Again, they're not going
Yeah.
to tell you that, most likely.
I can tell you, but I can only tell you from our cross section here that people will get a home equity line of credit and sock it away and say they won't take the money out. It's just a line of credit, but they'll qualify for it now because they're afraid they won't qualify later. And I have to warn them that it's not a given thing, that the bank can pull it at any time that they want to, because their situation has changed and they don't want to have that credit out there. But I have seen a sense that people are worried. Like, what do I have to get in place now to survive? And of course, we talk a lot about building cash reserves, right? Let's build cash reserves. So you don't have to take a loan out for an emergency. Instead, you're taking the loans out, as you said, for something you want to do. And then, of course, we manage those loans with them so that they pay them off on time and early and all of that. But it's a very interesting position you're in, I would say, and especially to talk to somebody who's dealing with the data behind the scenes. You talked to me a little bit off camera about something called the Nest. Will you tell us about the Nest? That's a research-driven sort of environment, right?
So a couple of years ago, we founded a branded community called The Nest, where we proactively invite customers to come and join The Nest. The Nest is the community we leverage for research. So within the customer experience world, there's two main focuses. We have a whole broad voice of customer program that is reactive. So you've interacted with us in some way, and we will engage with you with surveys, digital intercepts, or the chat logs that are happening between our agents and you on our website. So that's our VOC program. It's reactive. We'll go into that data, we'll analyze it, and provide reports out to the organization. The Nest is really our insights group, right? So this is when various people throughout the company come to us and say, hey, we'd love to understand customer sentiment or customer decision or thoughts about something. So we'll go to our customers, and we could segment that group by a lot of different demographics, and we bring things, questions or surveys or even designs, and we ask them for their feedback on that, and that directly impacts what we end up building. And I'll tell you, one of the greatest things, and this is a little counterintuitive, one of the greatest things to pull out of that is hard no's. So you go in there and you have this idea that we're going to do this and it's going to work, and everybody's like, nope, that's a terrible idea. That saves us time and money. It's incredibly helpful as an organization to be able to get that kind of feedback. And when we get the yeses or we get the direction that we're on to something, that's incredibly helpful too. When we want to show our customers that we're listening to them, so when we get onto a scent and it's going in the right direction, we make sure that we, drive that through our business team and our product team to have that built. Now, very rarely does a test lead to build in a couple of weeks. Usually it takes a couple of months to get through that process. And then we build it and launch it. And then it shows our dedication to meeting our customers where they are, listening to them, and ensuring they have what they need to be a successful customer and future partner as we grow our relationship with them.
Well, I couldn't ask for anything more than that. We do need to go to a break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you more about repeat borrowers and all the things that you're seeing emotionally in the market if you'll stay with us.
All right, Francis, can I get your phone number?
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, next on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, and Michael Tarquinio from Best Egg is joining us. So we are deep into the data of how a company the size of Best Egg is being very intuitive and very proactive about trying to build relationships with customers, because I think we all know at this point, transactional support is not enough, right? We need to treat people like they're people. So I have a question for you, Michael. For repeat borrowers, do you think, because we talked about this earlier in the show, that people will take out one installment loan, then another, and then another in sort of a rolling fashion. Do you think that that's more about cash flow, or is it about staying afloat, if you know?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think it really depends on your scenario. Like I said, our data has shown us that people on the upper end of the income scale and the credit score leverage this as kind of like a slush fund, right? So every couple of years they want to do a big vacation, they want to do, buy something big. They'll leverage this as a slush fund. I would say that people on the lower end of the income scale and the credit score tend to need this. You see the repeat business coming back and forth because of the way that things are changing in their economic life. So jobs are changing, spouses are getting sick, children need dollars for educational purposes. Those are the kind of stories that we hear on that side, where the repeat business is to kind of stay ahead just a little bit. It's never to make a giant leap. These people aren't looking to come in and grab $15,000 or $20,000 to go on a vacation. These people are looking for a couple thousand dollars at a time over the course of every couple of years to pay off the car problem that they had, to pay off the medical bill that they incurred when something happened unexpected that wasn't covered or they didn't have insurance. So it really does sit in both of those worlds.
Can you tell me, was there some sort of, are you sensing sort of this mental exhaustion from people? I don't know how much you deal with people directly, but in terms of the company doing the research, is there a sense of this mental exhaustion about finance lately that maybe wasn't there, say, a year ago or so?
I think the economic tracker shows a little bit of that. We also do IDIs, which is our one-on-one interviews with our customers, and we'll do them for a variety of reasons. Sometimes to dig into a specific topic, but you don't just jump on an interview with somebody, as you know, and dive right into a topic. You get to know them a little bit.
Yes.
And I could say almost 90% of the time that we're having these conversations, the exhaustion comes through immediately. They're talking about their money. They're talking about their situation, heartbreaking stories. We had a woman who took out a personal loan. She had contemplated for months harvesting her eggs and selling them as a means to an end for money because she had all of these bills. And she turned to us and we were able to get her a loan and she didn't have to, have that invasive medical procedure. But talking about stress and exhaustion, thinking about that kind of decision, and people who've leveraged our financial options to pay for cancer treatments for a loved one. They don't want to be in this situation. They got stuck in a situation where they needed that money. And I think that's the draining part, is knowing that because of the time that they are in their economic life, they just couldn't make it happen any other way. And that burden is very exhausting to them.
Yeah, I mean, the stories are what really bring us to do what we do, right? It's the stories like that that cause you to get up in the morning and go and try and solve a problem in some way. I don't have any sort of lending institutions on the show very often. I have them from time to time when I think that they're sort of responsible, right? I mean, being a lender does not mean you have nefarious means. It just means you're offering something that people need and you get an interest rate in return. The thing we want to make sure of is that people borrow responsibly and they know how to pay back their loans responsibly. And, as you know from our system, that speeds that process up and helps them build the other financial stability that they need. But that emotional temperature you're talking about sensing, I'm seeing across the board. There's still some optimism. People are still like, we're inherently optimistic, like it's going to be okay, we're going to get another job or we're going to do this well. But initially, heads are hanging a lot these days. If you had a magic wand, if you could wave a magic wand, Michael, and fix one thing, one barrier that keeps customers from achieving their real financial peace of mind, what would it be, and what do you think it would take to actually get there?
This is an easy one for me. It's something I've thought about for years. It's a huge gap. You see tiny things, instances of this popping up, but I think there needs to be mandatory financial literacy learning starting at a very young age. Middle school through high school. Listen, I love education. It's obviously very important, but I think there's arguments to be made that there's elements of our current educational system that don't have relevance anymore. I'm an older person. I went through school. We had to take cursive writing. Nobody does cursive writing anymore. It's a lost art. And yes, it's beautiful, but like, was there value in teaching a whole bunch of kids with under a threat of ruler to learn cursive writing? So today, I think there are fundamentals in every single person's life that are facts. You are going to probably need to buy a car. You're going to need to get insurance. You're going to need a savings account and some banking stuff. If you're looking forward thinking in children and 529s, these are nothing. None of these items are taught in school as part of a curriculum that prepares you. And I was watching this comedian recently, and he talks about, learning so many weeks on triangles, and now he's an adult and he never needs that information. But nobody taught him how to do this basic life skills you need from a financial perspective. And it's things that everybody needs to do. And the fact is, you can graduate high school, and whether you go to college or not, you're on your own to figure that out. Now, maybe you're lucky and your parents have some background and they can help and support with that, but a lot of us didn't have that growing up. And it's very much kind of like search and find and try to figure it out. The greatest thing that we have now for younger people is the internet. So you do get a lot of information available to you. But I think without a guided curriculum to get you there or to even give you the basics, you're really just kind of hoping that things work out. And that's no way that we should be running, especially around financial literacy.
Yeah, thank you.
Of
What he said,
course.
folks. What he said. There, the government puts out a financial literacy course for free to high schools, and I get called into the high school because it doesn't include anything about managing your debt. So I go to the high school, and and people say, or I'll ask, how long do you think it's going to take you to pay off your student loans? And some wise guy in the room always raises their hand and says, forever. They have no idea. And they're 17 years old, having an 18 years old take out these loans. No real idea of what that means. I completely agree with you. At a young age, we need to start teaching people not just how to manage their money, but how not to be afraid of money.
Like I went through, so I graduated, high school in the early 90s, shuffled off to college, and every 5 minutes across college campuses, there's tables selling you credit, they're offering you credit cards.
And give
And
me
it
a
was like,
t-shirt.
yeah, no problem. Who cared about credit? You just sign your name, you get a credit card, you buy in all this stuff that you don't need. And now it's shifted to a real fear of credit. A lot of young people have no idea what to do with credit. They're actually afraid of it, but it's something they need. So, we have to find a balance between not educating them and making them fearful. And somewhere in the middle, they have to understand the value of credit and how to be responsible with it.
Well, let me ask you a question about that because I find that a very interesting comment. Do you think, so let's just go back and give our followers just a tiny bit of history about credit, right? Fair Isaac credit or FICO, that FICO score that you folks see. That's two guys, Fair and Isaac, who decided, hey, this is a good idea to take your credit history and stick a number on it so bankers can look at a number, right? But I'm old enough to remember the day when a bank would actually read your credit report, okay? So now we go by a number. Do you think that, well, so let me say, I find people complain to me quite a bit that their number is this and they can't get a loan because of it, or their number is great and everybody's offering them money, but it doesn't really reflect what their actual financial picture is these days because there's this sort of disconnect, just like you were talking about. Do you find that's the case with credit? That sometimes you see people who are totally credit worthy, but their score is lousy, or the other way around, their score is great because they pay everything, but they're doing it by leveraging their credit cards?
Yeah, I think the scoring thing is very funny to me. The example I always give is like you and I might have the same exact credit score, 700, let's just say, or 720. So it's good, but it's not great. Except a couple of months ago, you were 650 and you're on your way up. And a couple of months ago, I was 820 and I'm on my way down. But A number's a number, and we both have the same credit score, and we're treated the same. And I think that's where we run into a little bit of the problem when we start to narrow things down to a single number, right? It's like, oh, well, look at that number. That tells us the story. Well, no, the story is I just lost my job and I'm struggling to make ends meet. And you just got a huge promotion and you've paid off a whole bunch of credit cards. We're two totally different people with the same number associated with us. So I think that's part of the history that you talked about and some of the problems that it leads to. I think tying back to what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, and I don't think, younger people are coming out of school, any kind of schooling, really understanding like that whole spectrum of the credit score, where they land on it, and the things that they should be doing to climb up it, and why you'd want to climb up it. I think there's a lot there that can be unwrapped, obviously not in the time we have today, but there's something there that's definitely of concern.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We could talk about this forever. We're going to have maybe a minute left, but I just want to ask before we close, is there some small thing that your company has done, that your team has done, that has made a big impact?
And I think for our entire team, spending time face to face with our customers and hearing their stories revolutionized the way we approach our customers. But more importantly, when we gather all this research, is we make recommendations back to the business. And getting those stories as part of the bigger picture helped us build recommendations that really are supporting our customers in a way that we build relationships, we build trust, we give them confidence. I think previously, the idea was like, well, you're a transaction. How do we get you in, fill out an application, approve you for a loan, and get you out the door? And hopefully, you pay it all back. I think now we understand our people, our customers a little bit better. And that goes into every recommendation that we make. We're big customer advocates now. Where before, I think it was like, all right, how do we make sure that this company is maximizing our revenue?
Yeah, thank you so much. You gave great answers to questions that I wasn't sure would be that easy, but given your position and the data that you collect, I think you did a great job and I really appreciate it. And I think it's been
Pleasure.
eye-opening to hear. Yeah, I think it's been eye-opening to hear how somebody like Best Egg is, leaning into that human side of finance. And I think that's where you and I connected to begin with. And I just want to remind our listeners and our viewers or our followers that, I know you feel alone sometimes about this stuff, and you feel like the bank is the enemy, the financial coach is the enemy, whatever. You're not alone, and things are changing. Systems are starting to change. Maybe not fast enough, but they're changing. And so I would highly encourage you to reach out to a professional if you're struggling financially or not struggling financially and just want to manage your money better. And Michael, can I ask you to just give your website address one time for us? And I'll put it up on the screen for everyone as well.
Just go to bestegg.com.
Bestegg.com.
Easy,
Perfect.
easy enough, right?
Perfect.
All right, let's get your phone number, Francis.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can always go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.